And if you've spent any time in the church, you know that there are several verses in the New Testament that are pretty scary. And today we actually heard one of those verses, and some of you in this room actually know what I'm talking about, and some of you are wondering what you missed when Scott was reading. Depending upon your upbringing, depending on the type of church you attended, if you attended, you know, long ago, some of you, not all of you, some of you are worried about your relationship with Christ, your salvation. And yet, some of you have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. So let me refresh your memory. Paul says to the church in Corinth, "Therefore, whoever eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of sinning against the body and blood of the Lord." Now, he's talking about Holy Communion here, and it may seem odd to you hearing this, but I actually know people, because of this verse, don't come to the communion table. That something in their life happened to them, or they did something that they see as something that makes them unworthy to come to the communion table. Nobody here in this room. But I know people who take this verse so seriously that they have chosen not to come to the table so that they would experience a future judgment or a future wrath because they took it in an unworthy fashion, which is a sad, sad thing. Now, this is lived out in all sorts of ways, whether you know it or not, in the way Christianity works. For many years, and at least in some churches, to be able to take communion in a worthy manner, they would tell you that it's best to fast from your last meal on Saturday night and not eat or drink anything until you've come to church the next day and received communion. And that is in one kind of human way of saying that will prove that you're worthy and that you can come to the table, that you don't eat breakfast and you don't drink coffee before you come to church. But is that what it means to take communion in a worthy manner, the way that Paul is talking about? Now, if we think about the views on communion, I would assume that if we put everybody's thoughts together in this room, we'd end up on some sort of continuum. That on one end, people don't give communion much thought. That, well, it's just something we do twice a month, and when it's time to come up, we come up and take communion, and I don't think much about it, and then I go back to my seat. It's just something we do. Somewhere in the middle is this idea that communion, well, it's an important thing, and it should have some reverence surrounding it because it's a reminder that Christ gave his life for us and that Christ is present, so we should have some reverence, and it is a very important thing. But if we get to the far end of the spectrum, there are some folks who say, well, we can't possibly live up to God's expectations, and it's best that I don't take communion so that I don't have future judgment at the end of my life, so I'll just avoid it. Now, here's the thing, is that I would tell you, is that, and this is the same thing that I've told people who fall into that far category, And I've unfortunately had many discussions with folks over this, is I say that if you're actually concerned, you have nothing to worry about. The fact that you care means you don't have to worry about the judgment of God at all. But wherever we're at on this thing, we have to make sense of where should we be on that continuum. You know, I think to some degree, the folks who take it too lightly and the folks who take it way too seriously need to move to the middle. And in this case, I would apply something that I call the Solomon Principle. And I've used it before here on Sunday mornings, and it's not anything that I read somewhere. It's just something that I've come to in my years of study of Scripture, where King Solomon in Ecclesiastes says this, and I think this is the Solomon Principle. The person who fears God will avoid all extremes, meaning they won't take it too casually and they won't take it so seriously, but somewhere in the middle, or finding middle ground, is really the best place to be. In other words, King Solomon was pointing out, he says, if you believe in God, if you believe that God is real and that God is trying to direct your life, that it's best to avoid overreacting or underreacting to many things in this life. That somehow that there's a middle path that is the most reasonable. So if we applied it in this sense, we'd say treating Holy Communion as a little snack before we go home is probably not a great thing. Or that the meal is so holy and so special that we best be very sure that we have our act together before we come here. We should avoid that as well. This verse in 1 Corinthians 11 has caused concern for probably the past 1,940 years among the Christian family. And maybe it doesn't to you, but there are folks who see this and they shudder. But I think to understand what is going on, we got to go back in time to understand the situation in Corinth. So first of all, we need to know that there were no churches back around 50 to 60 to 90 AD when Paul wrote this letter to the church in Corinth. He was the founder of this church, and after he got it going for a couple of years, he left to start more churches other places, and he left the church in charge of what we would call elders or folks to be in charge. And since there were no churches, they met in houses. And usually they would meet in the largest house of any of the Christians in that community. So, and it stands to reason that the largest house would be owned by the richest person or the richest Christian. So they would meet in these large houses, and the custom was before worship, they'd have dinner first. Really, the first potlucks. And so they would have a dinner before moving in to worship. Now, the problem was the owner of the house wouldn't invite the entire church to the potluck. He would only invite his friends and the people that he liked the best, so they would have a meal beforehand and lots of wine. Lots and lots of wine. And by the time they had eaten the food that they could afford to eat and drink the wine that they could afford to drink, they knew that the time for worship was after that, and then everybody else would show up for worship. Now, the problem was, some of those folks were very poor. Some of those folks really didn't have enough food to eat, and they show up to this large house with, you know, probably well-appointed for that time, and they show up, and the other rich folks in the Christian church in Corinth were not only full, but they were also drunk. And yet there were people who came to church who probably didn't have much to eat at all. And you can see the disconnect where it would be like, it really just goes against the idea of caring for one another and bearing one another's burdens. So Paul, who hears about this, writes them a letter, 1 Corinthians, and at the beginning of the section, he says to them, he's like, look, in the following directives, I have no praise for you, for your meetings do more harm than good. And then a little bit later on, he says, when you come together, it's not the Lord's Supper you eat, for as you eat, each of you goes ahead without waiting for anyone else. One remains hungry, and the other gets drunk. I mean, even imagine a large table, even though it was close to the ground. Those who came early and were eating were sitting around the table, and then those who weren't invited, the poor ones, wouldn't have room at the table, but they'd be sitting kind of along the wall watching all of this take place. It's a big disconnect. So Paul wasn't making commentary on the integrity of an individual taking Holy Communion as he was instructing about how it was administrated and how to receive it. They were careless in their worship. They were excluding folks. They were people eating and really over-drinking and then excluding others at the same time. I mean, it would be like this. It would be like as if I said, okay, starting in a couple of weeks, before church begins, I'm going to have breakfast served here at church in the fireside room. And I'm going to lock the doors. And I'm only going to invite the people that I want to come to that breakfast beforehand. And not only that, but we're also going to have a mimosa fountain running. And you hope to get invited, but you probably won't because there's only going to be a few of us. And we're going to eat and have wonderful catered-in breakfasts, and we're going to drink mimosas until we can't drink anymore, and then I'll stumble into service. You'd kind of go, what? What? That doesn't sound good. Well, exactly. I mean, the thought of what was happening in Corinth even, you know, it makes me feel uncomfortable. Then that is the judgment that Paul is talking about, not whether an individual is worthy to take communion, but that they were making a mockery of worship and the notion that we bear one another's burdens. And this is such a far cry from what the church was doing in Jerusalem not more than 30 years earlier. Listen to this. This is what was happening in the church in Jerusalem not long before this. All the believers were together, and they had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as they had need. They broke bread in their homes, and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts. That's the model of the church, and Corinth was far from it. So as you know, we've been looking at some of the words of Martin Luther. I brought a little support this morning here to help me out. What does Martin Luther have to say about this? Well, this is where he goes. Martin Luther says, if you are heavy laden and you feel your weakness, go joyfully to the sacrament, that is, to Holy Communion, and receive refreshment, comfort, and strength. If you wait until you are rid of your burden in order to come to the sacrament purely and worthily, you must stay away from it forever. Martin Luther writes that in something called the Large Catechism, lines 72 and 73. And you can see that is a far cry from the things that we presume that Paul is saying to the church in Corinth. And incidentally, as you look at the picture up here in the quote, you can see the typewriter that Martin Luther used to type those words. I think that's really amazing. I checked with some of our folks who went to Germany this year. They said they were pretty sure they saw that typewriter in Germany. So enjoy. So Martin Luther says, no, you don't have to have your act together to come to the table. Not at all. He even uses the word joyfully. Think about that, right? The idea that when life gives you lemons, you can still come to the table, still come to communion joyfully, because it's about the who, not the what. Not what is going on, but who you're dining with, fellow church members and Christ himself. That we can find joy in the who, not necessarily the what. So when we are besieged, we have an opportunity to meet with God. We have a place to share our burdens with someone who understands. Christ understands because he lived among us. That we have a place for refreshment and comfort and strength. And we are reminded that Jesus gave us the meal because we are sinners and not a reward for those who are perfect. Matter of fact, if a person is perfect, we know that can't happen, but if they see themselves as perfect, they actually have no need for communion. They really have no need for Jesus. I mean, of course that's an illusion, because we all need Jesus, who offers forgiveness and strength and even course correction for our lives. But I think that's the deal. We need to recognize that in ourselves. We need to recognize that we have a deep need for God because we're a mess. Matter of fact, Luther goes on to say, in such a case, meaning someone who sees that they're perfect, Christ pronounces this judgment. If you are pure and upright, you have no need of me, and I have no need of you. Therefore, they alone are unworthy, who neither feel their infirmities nor admit to being sinners. So if you don't think you need a fresh start on a regular basis, there's no need for Jesus or the meal that he offers. wherein, in fact, Jesus comes to earth. He comes to us because we need help in this life. And then he promises to be present at the meal that he gives us. I mean, if I was going to say there's kind of two loose requirements for communion, one, that you acknowledge that you have a need for Jesus because of the mistakes that we all make, and two, that you know that Jesus is going to be there to meet us when we are given the bread and the wine. I mean that only loosely. There are no requirements, because communion is something that God does. Jesus invites us, period. I mean, if we come to the table and we don't even fully know that what we're getting into and we don't quite grasp it, but yet we feel compelled to come, well, then that's okay too. Because it's at God's invitation. It has nothing to do with our comprehension. Nothing. See, Jesus knew that telling us he loved us wasn't enough. Words alone were not enough for God. Because he knows that we forget words. Most of you won't remember what I said an hour from now. So Jesus gives us a meal that we can taste, touch, digest, something tangible that will stick with us a little bit longer, all because God's good and that he knows we are not. And such simple elements too, right? I mean, bread and wine. So simple that almost every culture in the world has a form of bread and a form of wine and or juice. I mean, it's almost like God says, I want to make sure that people have access around the world to my presence and my love, because everybody needs help. So when it comes down to it, coming to the meal, coming to communion is a meal for sinners. And as your chief sinner, I'm not ashamed to tell you that I need all the help I can get from Jesus. I am not worthy. But thankfully, that is why Jesus invites us to eat with him. Amen.